Blog Talk Radio.
That's the website's fault. I hit the button, but you know it had to circulate. It gave me the whole circulating arrow. Darn it, technology! I was hype. I got it too. I was about to be like, yeah. Here we go, people. Here we go. We're live. We're here. We're back. It's Wednesday, November the 4th. Did I just say that? Is it November already? It is the middle of the last quarter of the year. The leaves are falling, and so are everyone's hopes of everything they plan to do this year. Hopefully you got some things done, because you got less than 2 months.
A couple things, I guess.
Now,
I don't even remember, man. It's so cold.
Now, Clayton and I are going to respond to a letter that I received today about transracial adoption. Okay, we're just going to pose the question: can transracial adoption work? All right, Clayton and myself, and then I'm going to reveal. Finally, I'm going to reveal the season finale survey. Sorry, I'm stuttering because I'm cold in here. But I'm going to reveal the season finale survey. We know that every year we do a big survey, just something to gain some attention, something that people can debate over, talk about. 2 years ago, we started this with the best black movie of all time. And
we got
about 35 or 40 movies. It was ridiculous. And eventually, all of the votes cracked it down to one movie, which was our winner, which was Love and Basketball. Last year, we had our second season finale survey. The survey was the best black sitcom. And obviously, the three front runners, far and beyond the others, were The Cosby Show, Fresh Prince, and Martin. But the winner came to be The Fresh Prince. What's the survey going to be this year? What is it going to be this year? And what about this transracial adoption? Okay, and there's something else that's got our attention. What's really relevant? Now, Clayton.
What's up, man?
There's an outbreak, man. And it's a shocking outbreak. College students all over the country are afraid of this outbreak. There's an outbreak of E. coli in Chipotle Mexican Grill Incorporated stores.
You're lying.
Oh, yeah. Food poisoning outbreak.
It's a wrap. It's a wrap.
41 cases were reported in Portland, but Oregon authorities have lowered the number in this by 2 to 10. It's happening all over the place. 41 cases, Clayton. Yeah. This is serious and this is shocking.
Yeah.
And listen here, if you're over the age of 40, or if you don't like, you know, fast food or Mexican food, you aren't that worried about this. But everyone I know has eaten a bunch of E. coli, if we're to be honest. If we're to be honest about this outbreak. So
it wasn't even food in the wrap. It was just E. coli.
This poses the question, at what point do you stop doing something that you love? You know, if they tell you you'll die, would you stop eating Chipotle?
Man,
no.
I think about it. I probably would,
I don't know.
But I would think for a good hour, I'd be like, man, forever? Or how
that's really relevant. Ben Carson is leading in the polls for, not the polls, there aren't any polls yet, but he's leading in the primary Republican presidential race. So that's good. Donald Trump's not leading. That's all we really care about. Ben Carson's black. So this is weird. This is weird because we had a black guy and we all want to keep a black guy, but to what extent? This is kind of like the Chipotle thing. To what extent are we going to accept a black guy? Are we just going to say forget Hillary and forget the Democratic the Democratic campaign? We want the black guy.
The Republicans are testing black people. He's like, let's see if y'all really will just pick the black one. And we have to prove them wrong. It's our job to prove them wrong. Pick the right candidate.
But I feel like if there was a black guy versus Hillary Clinton, most black men would still go with the black guy. Just
especially if they're not looking, you know.
Oh,
you're not reading
up.
You just see him. You're like, Ben Carson, the surgeon? Oh, yeah, I read this book. You got to read Currents.
He's got gifted hands. We need those hands on our nation. Okay. Now listen here. We're going to have a phone blast, and we're going to get some answers here because there's a topic that we need to discuss. I'm going to find it. Now, Clayton, how do you feel about the Quan? Just real quick, tell me about, because I've been hitting the Quan ferociously. I mean, vociferously. And you have a passionate take on the Quan. Does everybody know about the Quan? The Hit the Quan is like the new dance thing. You know, that every year there's a new dance thing, and old people have to learn how to do it so they can look young and cool. And now I'm a part of the old people who want to look young and cool. But I also
you're in the first step. You're in the first step of that age group. Once you get like mid/late 20s, even though you're what, 25, you're right at the middle. That's step one, man. Next thing you know, you don't even know the name of the dance. Then it's a wrap.
So do you not like it? What's your thing? What's your thing with this dance?
Man, it's cool. You know, if you do the whole thing, it's actually a nice little line dance. You know, because that's how you gotta tell it to the folks without the melanin in the skin. It's a nice little line dance, you know, if you see the whole thing. But I just don't like when, like, it's a group, you know how dudes, when they start dancing, it's just a group of guys, and basically the dance is like a rhythmic pelvic thrust. And you're just moving around with it in a circle full of your closest male friends, and it's like, how close are we trying to be right now? You know? Like, this might be the one dance we gotta just find a lady to do that with, you know.
It was cool and we could dougie like, together, but we can't quant it on top of one another. Now, Asia Downing.
What's up?
What is happening? You're here.
I'm here. I'm getting off of work, of course. And when you're supposed to get off at 5:30, you do a show at 5:30, you never get off at 5:30. So my apologies, my host, my co-host.
Cool. Now listen here. Asia and Clayton and I are going to respond to this letter. I finally pulled it up. I've got a letter. Now, for those of you who don't know, this is about me. This is about this show. This is about things that I want to say, topics that I like. However, that's not the chief purpose of this thing. This is for me to feel my fan base. That's what this is, because I have, you know, the stage. I have stand-up comedy. That's for me to do my thing. The Eric Terrell Show is not for me to do my thing. It's for me to know how you guys feel about my thing, how you guys feel about the topics that I so heavily hit on the air and on the stage, and just for me to love on my fan base. And so this is what I would like to do more often. This is the first letter that we've gotten, and I'm excited to read it. Starts off, now I'm going to call her Stephanie. I'm going to call her Stephanie. She's a white woman. She comes to my shows, and this is what she says. Okay. I love your show because you really are talking about the real issues. Now, I was thought I was going to leave that part out, but I felt like saying that part. So here goes the real letter. I'm a social worker. I'm a social worker and look every single day at race and class in our culture. And so here's a topic that I'd love to hear your thoughts on and also maybe your audience. As you know, my husband and I are white. We are in the early stages of process of adopting a child. Of course, the question comes up of transracial adoption because we are adopting from foster care systems and children of color are overrepresented in that system. I know this is a very sensitive topic, and I feel our system is a huge problem because it punishes poverty, which it also caused. But anyway, we are very open to a child, but want to consider how hard and weird it could be for an African-American child to be adopted by a white family or any transracial adoption. Of course, every child has their own feelings on the issue, and it's very personal, but it's a topic I would like to hear various angles and perspectives on so I can think about this. So, and then she says, I wonder if your audience might want to chime in, blah, blah, blah. Do you feel me? That's how she finishes off. Do you feel me? We feel you, Stephanie. We feel you. We feel you, and we hear you loud and clear. First of all, really quickly, I'm going to come back in. We're just going to chat. We're just going to have fun. Finally, I've designed an episode that me, Clayton, and Asia can really allow our voices to be heard, as well as someone from my fan base. And I do have a fan base. I keep saying that not to brag, but just because I'm in shock myself that that's a thing.
You
I have.
Keep saying over and over.
Hey, what you say? What do you say every show, Eric? What do you say every show, Eric?
Hey, God did it. God
exactly.
did it.
That's who did it, bro.
God did it. So to Stephanie, who I'm very proud to have in my fan base, which is weird. First of all, before I give my initial reaction, I want to recollect the video that happened in the school when the police officer knocks the desk down with the little black girl. And did you guys see the video? I completely forget about the details.
Unfortunately,
I'm glad you know what I'm talking about because I forget the details. But this girl's sitting in the classroom, and the white man, the officer, comes in, and he's going to escort this girl out of the classroom. Obviously, she's a disturbance. You know, there's people who are going to side with the police officer, and there's people who are going to side with the girl. Because at the end of the day, if you're an officer or an official in these schools, you have to have the restraint and the maturity to escort this girl out of the classroom unharmed. But
exactly.
at the same time, this girl was already combative. She wasn't about to go no damn place, okay? She was braced for a fight. So being a man and knowing that he had to overexert his efforts in order to get her out of the classroom in the first place, he kind of went a little too far and he kind of shoved her to the ground, and it just looked ugly on camera. So I do kind of understand the officer. But at the end of the day, I just bring that up to say that this girl is a black foster child. Now, foster children have a reputation for being this combative. Now, this is a foster kid who made the news. It ain't the first time a foster kid that made the news for being combative and being rambunctious and being defiant. All right. Now, put this black foster child in a white foster home or with white foster parents or adopted parents. Would she be this violent? Would things be differently? Would she be more accustomed or familiar or relatable to a white man or a white police officer? Would she have more respect, basically, at the end of the day? Would this have happened? All right? Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that white parents are better than black parents. We all know that's not true. But at the same time, it is something to think about. Because while black parents are just as good of parents as white parents, White people have a calm about them, okay? White people have something of a standard of behavior, not behavior, but a standard of antics, basically. Whereas though, even if this girl wasn't exactly combative, she could have still felt the way she felt, but may not have been so violent. Do you see what I'm saying, Clayton?
I see where you're coming from, but I don't know. She didn't seem that combative to me on the tape. It seemed like she was just I don't know, man. It seemed like he was just ready to throw her down, regardless of what was going on.
I don't know where we're going. I don't know where we're going. But in any case, the other end of the spectrum is that people who grew up in white homes tend to have white tendencies, and I personally don't think that there's anything wrong with white tendencies. Obviously, we have quote unquote acting white and quote unquote acting black, so the question is then, does a black child risk losing their cultural identity being placed in a white home? I love the line in the letter when Stephanie says, "I want to consider how hard and weird it could be for an African American."
Yeah, you can tell social worker how she wrote that letter. It was the most politically correct piece I've ever
read. It was good. It was like she can actually write a letter, but it would be weird. It would be a very weird environment. You know, like should black people grow up drinking Kool-Aid? Like, is that just the way it should be? Should we know about Roots, and should we know about Martin, and should we know about the Cosby Show? Is that necessary? Because that's not going to happen in Stephanie's home for this kid. It could. Now that we've mentioned it, she's listening. It may happen, but but is that necessary? What do you think, Asia?
Well,
Pancake.
Well, I think depending on the age of the child that they're trying to adopt. I've gone my freshman year when I went to Hampton. There was a kid there who had never seen Friday before. Almost slapped him. But, you know, he's black, and I'm pretty sure his parents were black, but everybody raises their child differently. And regardless of race or religion or anything of that matter, I feel like your upbringing is definitely going to have an impact on you in your future. But, I mean, people change, you know. Once this child may be able to get out on their own and explore the world themselves, they're going to discover their own selves and what they like and what they want to do. So I don't think that it's a bad thing.
Just because they don't necessarily watch Martin growing up doesn't mean that they don't know how important Martin is to their cultural identity. You know, I just...
Right. I watched.
Like, y'all like
it,
but, you know, I just didn't. Right. Oh, yeah, we love Martin. Let's not.
Of course. but, yeah, I think that they can be exposed to new things. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like even if a black child was grown up in a, you know, have their parents and was exposed to their culture and their traditions and stuff, but they may not ever get to, because I love learning new things. I branched out on, like, you know, go home with somebody that was Caucasian and see what they do for their traditions. Maybe not eat their food because it's not going to taste the same, but, you know, just do different things with them to see, you know, just explore. You broaden your mind, you broaden your horizons, and it's up to you to choose what you want to do. Yeah, like,
right.
You know, the opera, or, you know, and yeah, I like fried chicken. So That's me.
Yeah, and
all of it. You know,
and
I,
yeah,
you're more well-rounded person.
Right, right, right.
It makes it easier for you when you're in different environments. You know, if you're in a predominantly, you know, white job, you know,
right.
If you're black and you've been around black people your whole life, you know, may be intimidating and you may not know what to do or, you know, so
I think
it's excellent. I'm all for it. So, and I don't think anything
would
be weird. As a child, it might be a little harder, but little overall, I don't think that there's anything wrong. There's no, you know, lashing on other races.
Yeah,
like that,
yeah. That's so true. Now, I think it would be weird, but I don't think that means that it wouldn't be a great thing or that it wouldn't be productive. Some of the best and most fun things spring out of awkward moments. You know, it would the fact that it is weird can make you embrace it. You know, it can make it fun. Think of the Fresh
mm-hmm.
Prince when he went to his environment in Bel Air. It was weird, but it's also a great story. You know, it's also really fun. So don't let anything that's weird, because at the end of the day, all weird means is that it's just abnormal. It's just not within
it's
your
different.
Comfort zone. Yeah, it's
right.
Different. Right, it's different. So, yeah, it'll be weird. It'll be weird, but so what that it's weird? Okay, now we have a phone call real quick. 718, what's happening?
Yo, it's Chris.
Chris, I knew it. What's happening, Chris? How you feeling?
Another night, man. How you doing?
Man, I'm glad you could call in and give us a comment, man. I was looking for some different angles on this thing. This is my friend Chris Stenner. He's a comedian in Philadelphia, and he's white. What do you think?
I'm all about it. That's cool. There's enough babies, you know? He's definitely, you know, spread them around. Fuck it. There's definitely enough Asian babies. In my school, there's a couple of kids that were, you know, raised that way. And, you know, if you want to learn about where you're from, you can. Nothing to stop you. And it's better
yeah.
than some of the environments you would have been forced to live in, you know. At least you got somebody wants you. Fucking.
Listen.
Not a lot of people have that.
Somebody wanting you is not the problem. If you get put in a white home, I'm sure some of these kids would prefer to drink champagne.
Well,
and
it
eat
doesn't
great.
Have to be a white home. It could be it's probably gonna have to be somebody with money because adopting kids ain't cheap. But it doesn't necessarily have to be a white person.
That's true.
You know, or if you want to just like adopt kids from Haiti or some shit or some country, if something happens, what's wrong with that?
That's true, because the black people who become foster parents or adopted parents are black people who have some money, and usually they're adopting a white child who's coming from poverty. So one way or the other, and you're looking at the same situation. I feel you. Now,
like in Blindside, that movie.
Blindside.
That was a real story.
Worked out
perfect.
In St. Louis?
Right. Right. Hey, I appreciate you, Chris. Thanks a lot, man.
Yeah. Take it easy.
Oh, yeah, bro. Now, we've got one more really quickly. 610. You're live. What's happening?
Hey, it's Carlia.
Carlia. Girl, what's happening?
Hey. I felt like I had to call in.
About time you call into the show. I'm so mad you ain't ever called me.
I'm sorry. Well, I just felt like this topic really applied to me, you know, having adopted 4 kids. And,
it certainly applies to you. This is my coworker now. Let us have it.
Hi. Well, I just think that, and what some people had already said, like, what comes first really is love. And to the person who wrote your letter, like, they have to be willing to love anybody who comes to their doors if they're really considering adopting. And part of that is exposing them to their culture, to your life, you know. So I would just be careful, you know, if you're planning on adopting, you have to be open-minded to everything. And then the kids will come, you know. If the kids are young, then they'll accept anything. You know, kids are colorblind. So it's up to them to really expose them to what they need to learn about themselves. If the kids are older, like I have a, you know, my foster brother now, he just needs attention and love, and I don't think he would care who gave it. So I always take it upon myself to make sure he's exposed to the things that I think that a 12-year-old black child should be exposed to. But, I mean, that could be anything, including the opera. You know, my 18-year-old, 19-year-old brother sings opera, you know? So.
Right, yeah, yeah. And that's oh, no. That's you said the most poignant things that need to be said. First of all, that the most important thing is love, what I say at the end of every show, and that kids are colorblind. Jesus Christ, they're colorblind. That's so true. Isn't that true? Talking about the opera, that's what Asia pointed out. It's so amazing that kids that grew up in different environments do different things. I mean, and these are some of the most fascinating black people that you'll ever meet, the black people that like the opera and like and
really?
Like to eat cheese and crackers with wine.
No, so I mean, just thinking about, like, that person who wrote that letter, like, it won't be weird, you know? If you're showing love, it's not weird, you know? So.
There you go. There you go.
That's my opinion.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you, Carly.
Oh, no problem.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. Now, I'm going to leave it there. I think Carly said it all. I know quite a few adopted people, and I'm pretty sure quite a few of them will check this show out, but Carly is one of them. She's my coworker, and I thank her for giving us the most poignant take on it. And with that, we will leave it there because that's where it needs to be left. And I'm going to, with the last 3 minutes, let you guys know what we're doing to end the show. We have 5 weeks left, and we know that for the next 5 weeks, I'm doing my church evangelism series. It's going to be about the youth. It's going to be about thugs, people who don't necessarily like church, and how we give them God. Okay, it's going to be good. It's going to be funny. It's also going to be very poignant and very compelling. And we're also going to finish the show off, our very, very last episode, our season finale. We're going to give the winner of the season finale survey, which I will reveal right now. Okay, and like I said, 2 years ago, the best black movie. Last year, we had the best black sitcom. And this year, the Barbershop Debate, the season finale survey, what we're talking about, Asia, Clayton, everyone listening, is who is the best black comedian? Who is the best black comedian? That's right. This is going to be a very, very fun debate.
Wow.
We've got Bill Cosby, Richard Pryor, Kevin Hart, Cat Williams, all of these guys. Fred Sanford, Dave Chappelle. I mean, there are names upon names of some of the greatest black comedians. Bernie Mac, Chris Rock, Eddie Murphy, Paul Mooney, Martin Lawrence, Dick Gregory. This one is going to be really good.
Oh, my gosh, there's so many factors. I got to do some research.
Yeah, yeah.
I got to watch some stand-up the next couple of
days.
Just to be fair, you got to include Sinbad, man. You got to be fair.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose you can. I suppose you can include Sinbad. You can,
Sinbad is funny.
Old school people are
what anybody said.
Yeah. Old school people are gonna want to include people like Moms Mabley, who
exactly.
Yeah,
you gotta include the women. I hear no
Monique
women.
Some more. He said, "I hear no more." it's gonna be good. It's gonna be good. Kevin Hart, believe it or not, he came onto the scene within the past 10 years. He is a prime time candidate, believe it or not, for best black comedian of all time. For just what he's done over the last 10 years, he's in the conversation with Chris Rock, Bill Cosby, Richard Pryor, Eddie Murphy, Cat Williams. That's right. We are looking at one of them who's doing his thing right now, Mr. Kevin Hart, and we're going to talk about him in comparison to the rest of them. There's a lot that goes into this, like you guys said. And each week we're going to add some juice to the fire or some gasoline to the fire. We're going to add a different aspect of the debate. Like Clayton said, there's so many different things to take into account. Y'all ready to do that?
It gets harder every year.
It gets harder every year. It gets harder every year. Oh, yeah. Listen here. Carlia told you the most important thing is love people. Love others. Love yourself. Yourself. And love the truth. And love, love. It's not hard to love, love. All you've got to do is love God, because God is love. And God.
What'd he do?
God did it.
Yes,
sir. Oh, yeah. God did it, baby. So, Bill Cosby, does the past year affect his argument? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know, guys. I don't know. I love, maybe. Oh, man, it hurts.
Only because he did a joke about doing that to girls. Like, he has a joke slipping some in girls' drinks. And you listen to it now, and you can even hear the audience just go, that's not cool. But
right.